All right, we're back, folks. This is the Ross Report. You got in the right place. You download the right show. I want to welcome my buddy, my friend, and a WWE Hall of Famer, Stone Cold Steve Austin, to the program. Hello, Steve.
Hello to the greatest broadcaster in the history of the pro wrestling business, soon to be the greatest podcaster in the history of the podcast business. I'm kicking it over here in Los Angeles, California, Jim. I'm proud to be your first guest. Welcome to the world of podcasting. I know you'll love it.
I am going to be the potentate of podcast. And by God, I'm not going to stop until I make it. Because it beats putting up the ring like I did when I first got in this business. And hauling wrestlers around that farted in my car. Boy, have I got some questions lined up for you, mister. You would think that I was deposing your ass for big money. I mean, these are serious mainline news questions.
Well, you might have should have been a damn lawyer.
Yeah, well, I won't go there. They're good people. Most of them. Some of them.
Okay, most of them. Hey, I know a couple that are decent people. Yeah, I know a lot of them that ain't.
I know the battling barrister is in Pittsburgh, Jerry McDivitt.
Oh, yeah.
He's got as good a lawyer as there is in America.
Jerry. Nice guy.
If I did anything bad, I want Jerry McDivitt in my corner. Back in the day, we were involved in some Undertaker programs. Two really strong personalities, two really respected guys. I love calling your matches, but I'm not so sure that I loved all of the matches you had with the Undertaker. Am I just looking at that through? I had great expectations for those matches, and I wasn't sure exactly what they were going to be. I was thinking of Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, like beat the hell out of each other type thing. I don't know, but am I off base on that? Were your matches with the Undertaker all of what you wanted them to be, or like everything else, would it have been? Well, they could have been a little better.
No, let me go. I know where you're going, and I understand. No, I never thought any of the matches that we had were the greatest in the world. And Jesus, I got the most respect for The Undertaker. Love that guy to death. Barely know him. You know, just travel with him. I mean, just travel around the same territory for years and years. But I think because you had a guy that was 6'10", 6'11", 300 pounds, and he was a dead man. And then on the other side of that, you had my tough ass, you know, in the black trunk and bald head and goatee. And I think it was more like a chemistry thing there. And no one was going to feel sorry for either one of us. You wasn't a sympathy type baby face and just two tough guys in a ring. And I think maybe we tried to overthink things and should have made it just more of a brutal slugfest. But those matches could have definitely been better. Now, the one that I had in the garden with him, when he went down for a backdrop and I kicked him and he brought his head up and that caught me under the chin. That was the first time I'd ever been knocked out in my life. I went down to Madison Square Garden and I'm laying there and there's Earl Hebner looking down at me. I looked up at Earl. I said, "Where am I?" He goes, "Damn boy, you in the garden." And so I was able to finish the match, but I don't remember the rest of the match. But me and Undertaker used to have a blast in tag team matches working for the same purpose,
right?
And tagging in and out.
Yeah, different deal.
I think we were very much in the same vein, but too similar. Although you know, not similar in looks or appearance or gimmick, I think we were wired the same, and it didn't make for the greatest flow of a match.
Well, with that said, how would your matches, if they had come to fruition, how would programs then with Goldberg and or Lesnar over the long haul? Like, you know, let's say you had 1 year at WrestleMania, it was going to be Stone Cold and Goldberg. 1 year at WrestleMania, the next year, let's say, or whatever, was with Lesnar. So you had that year slow burn, heated up, then ignite it right after the summer at the Royal Rumble, and then roar it through the WrestleMania, the old system, which is good. Would you have the same match with Goldberg and Lesnar as you did with Undertaker? Same styles? No.
It would have been completely different. I think with Brock, I think we could have wrestled and actually, you know, worked spots, more spots into it and wrestled more actually. And, you know, after I got dropped on my head, I turned into more of a brawler, but I could have wrestled with Brock and turned it into a brawl. With Goldberg, just put over his extreme power and explosiveness. Bill Goldberg, both those guys are two of the strongest guys that were ever been in a squared circle before. And this is only speculation, Jim, because those matches never happened.
Right.
But that would be how I would anticipate things. And then also, you know, with those two guys, I'm definitely the guy calling the shots. And then the Undertaker is kind of a little bit of a 50-50 type deal, you know, because he was his guy, I was my guy. And so, you know, there was a little bit of that going on, I think.
Yeah.
With the Goldberg or Brock Lesnar, now I'm talking and end of story, and that's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And so I think that dynamic would lend itself to a little bit better flow.
I don't think those guys have a problem with that. You know, you want one guy calling the plays. I can see the conflict there because Undertaker's got his playbook. You got your playbook.
Yes.
And you won.
We both had different playbooks.
And you both have won. And you both have won. I.e., you both made money in those playbooks. Quite frankly. What's your memories of 19? WrestleMania 19. We're in Seattle and it was a hell of a calamity of a weekend. And, for whatever reason, I can't even remember the reason. Maybe you can tell us. Maybe you remember. We kept your retirement match a secret.
Yeah.
And that was also, there may be a great reason, and I'm sure you're getting ready to tell us, but if there ain't a great reason, you're in Oklahoma again, if there ain't a great reason, then what a missed opportunity somewhere to have that last match.
I'll tell you what it was, Jim. Here's the reason I was thinking, because, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin was going to step down and retire at that match. My neck, my issues with my nerves were really starting to creep up on me. And, you know, I'd been pulling that wagon for a long time. Now when I took that year off, and Rock and Triple H had two breakout years, and both of the guys had been on their way up anyway, and both are tremendous talents, but in my absence had trademark years. And just some of the people on the internet say, well, that was the greatest year in the history of the business as far as what the company earned with me out of the picture. No. I had helped carry that wagon to that spot, and then it continued. So you can't leave Stone Cold out of that equation.
You mean the internet's wrong? You mean the internet's wrong?
What?
You mean the internet's wrong?
Well, you know, if they don't think that I had a hell of a part to do with that, then they don't know what they're talking about. But anyway, to go back to what you're saying,
yeah.
In my conversations with Vince, I mean, it was, I needed to get out of Dodge. My neck was bothering me. I put myself in harm's way. There wasn't a great future for me to continue beating my neck and my body up like that. But it was not going to be a great move for WWE, for Stone Cold Steve Austin to say, I announced my retirement now at WrestleMania 19. And just kind of stop all the momentum that you know the company had garnered through all the years of their hard work, you know, with everybody else, with DX, Triple H, and Rock, but me just saying that's my retirement match and leave. So I think it was that, and that you know I got to say it, the biggest star in the, at the time just steps down after WrestleMania 19. Hey, he's gonna throw things into a quagmire, stop our ratings, blah blah blah. I think that might have had something to do with it. It wasn't like it was a long-winded discussion with myself and Vince, but also, you know, I didn't want to retire. I was forced to retire. So, you know, it was kind of just a deal we kind of kept on the down low for the reasons I just stated, and that's what I believe to be why we kept it like that.
Do you think that if the company had not been publicly traded, that information might have been more forthcoming?
Well, I tell you what, man, I had told Vince, this story I don't think I've ever really told too many people. I was kind of running hard a few years before then, and my knees were bothering me. My old damn body beat to shreds, but I feel pretty good right now. I told Vince, I said, he was making plans, you know, they're fixed to take the company public. And I said, man, I said, Vince, I said, I think I'm about ready to retire. I think I'm going to get out of here pretty quick. And he goes, Steve, what are you talking about? I'm fixing to do my IPO, what do they call that? The initial public offering. Is that what it is?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he's fixing to go do his IPO. He goes, Steve, that's going to kill my IPO if you retire. He says, where are you staying tonight? I've mentioned the hotel. And I says, you mind if I come by and see you later? So yeah, come on by. So man, he came to my hotel after the show. It was Monday Night Raw. And we had a couple of drinks. And, he said, man, he goes, if you leave, this is going to kill my offering. And I said, hell, man, I said, Vince, I said, I just feel like hell. I'm ready to get off riding to the sunset. He goes, can you give me another couple of years? And I, at the time, I just wanted to go deer hunting, man. It was deer season. And I said, yeah, man. I said, I'll hang on for another couple of years for you. I just want to go deer hunting. And so I went hunting in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and you and your wife joined me on that trip.
Yeah.
And so we went deer hunting. But that you know, I'd mentioned getting out of the business a couple of years earlier than I actually got out of the business, and that was just due to my niece.
Yeah, we did some vignettes there at that hunting lodge, as I recall. Because I remember flying in there to that. Was that near Grand Rapids?
It was Cedar Rapids, Grand Rapids. It was something, East Lansing. It was wherever. It was in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I think the last guy I've been there was Ted Nugent or somebody.
Yeah.
Because it was way the hell out there. So my point is, I guess, that, you know, you never stop promoting. You know, you never stop. You know, I want people to come to my one-man shows. I want them to buy the barbecue sauce. You promote, you promote, you promote. And you can't turn that motor off, the entrepreneurial motor, where you say, gosh, dang it, man, the merchandise for that Austin retirement match and the DVDs and the monetizing this and this pay-per-view revenue or what it would do for the network. You know, as an old promoter, you say, gosh, dang it, I wish we could have taken advantage of that opportunity, but it just never did. Did you ever get close where it's like, well, let me think about it today. I'll let you know tomorrow. About coming back to doing one last WrestleMania. Did you ever get close in that decision in the last 3 or 4 years?
Nah, not really close. You know, if I go back, you know, each year would have been a little bit closer, you know, because, you know, it was less time out of the ring. But, you know, at this pace, you know, with what's going on and where I'm heading and not being in the ring for so long, you're really looking at too long of a time commitment to, you know, get ready for a match like that. And again, just like I told Chris Jericho a couple of months ago, you know, it took me, you know, 3 years to get the business out of my system and going through withdrawals. Man, I hated life. You know, I had fun and I wasn't miserable and I wasn't crying all day. But man, I love pro wrestling. I love being on the road. That's what I wanted to do with my life. And I had to give it up. Took me a long time to get over that. I'm over that now. I'm a happy camper. But I don't want to get all worked up, get back in the damn ring, and then come down from that again. You know, even though I would know, hey, this is a one-time gig, just get in shape and go do it.
Right.
It's not my cup of tea.
Right. People don't understand. Everybody's wired differently. You know, there's a lot of guys that we know that we travel with and we've sat in dressing rooms with. That if they were offered a lot less payday than you would get to come back and do that one more match, they'd do it in a heartbeat. Absolutely in a heartbeat, without even thinking about who they're working with or when or anything, their body, that bad hip or whatever, their neck, whatever the case is. Cause unfortunately, a lot of guys don't have the financial security and they need that one more payday. And it's a damn shame, quite frankly. But nonetheless.
So, Jim, but you know, I'm an all or nothing guy. Man, I'm either full on or full off. There's not a whole lot of middle ground for me. So I have to go full bore, get back in that thing. And if anybody asks me, hey, Steve, would you rather have more money or less money? I'm going to tell you I want more money. I think most people would make that same decision. So I can make a payday. But, you know, if that match did not live up to my expectations. I'm not talking about the fans, because there'd be many fans out there that would just love to see me in the ring doing my thing, and they would love that. But for me, selfishly, if I go out there with anything less than an A1 effort, A-plus performance, it would be considered a failure. I can't go out there and have a B-plus match. It's got to be A-plus. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So I set the bar extremely high for myself, and you know, I look back at some of my stuff, and I cringe. But if you're talking about just doing one comeback match or a one-off, if that son of a buck ain't the best match in the world, then I would consider it a failure, and I don't know if I want to set myself up to that, because I think I could probably be 95% of what I was. In my opinion, and this is me, 95% of Stone Cold is not enough. That guy was 120%.
Wow. Yeah, well, you know, hey, there's a lot of guys we both know if they could guarantee if we could guarantee them that they would be 95% of what they used to be, they'd take it in a heartbeat.
Well, and you know, that's the cool thing about, you know, life and business and wrestling and whatever. You know, everybody has their own ideas of what's acceptable. Everybody has their own levels or standards of what's cool for them. Me personally, I hope I'm alive for another 30, 35, 40 years. I don't want to go back and regret anything. I've got a few regrets in my life. Walking away from the company was one of them. Going back and having a potential stinker would be the biggest one of all. And
wow.
So I just soon let my legacy be what it was. And I had a damn blast doing it. And I want to be engaged and do a few things in the future, but not in that capacity.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't know what else you could prove. You had great matches with some guys. You helped put some guys on the map, which is always great to look back on your career and say, you know, I helped this guy and what the business should be built about anyway. Let me ask you this question. Do you have any regrets, career-wise, from not having a program of significance with Hogan?
Yeah, you know what? The thing about never having to run with Hogan, gosh, man, I was running so hard back then, hard-headed as hell, you know, the word on the street that, you know, he was never going to do any favors for anybody. I damn sure wasn't going to do any favors for anybody who wasn't going to favor back, if you know what I'm saying. And it's funny, when you listen to professional athletes talk about each other, you know, two badass basketball players, they'll rarely put another guy over. They'll talk in a complimentary tone, but they won't give that guy too much credit. Same thing was going on, I would think. And for me, you'd have to ask Hulk Hogan this question to get his opinion, but hey, I recognize everything that guy did, but I also recognize everything that I did. And I know how I like to work and how I like to fly in the ring and do my business. And, he was open to having a match.
I thought so.
Me, not so much. I thought the styles would clash. I didn't think it'd be that great of a match. And this is me outworking me. You know, I love the money that I made in the wrestling business, but I won't do a high profile match just to get a good payoff because I'd love to have the money, but it ain't about the money. It's about the match and the program. And if I'm not going to enjoy it, I'm not going to do it. And I guarantee you, you know, if my head would have been in a little bit different place and, I wasn't as, competitive or hard headed as I had been, then, you know, by all rights, a program should have happened. But again, I think that was, you know, and me, physically and mentally where I was at, I could go. I think Hogan would have probably been a step or two behind that. That wasn't acceptable to me. And I didn't want to slow myself down. And I say that with all due respect to Hulk Hogan and Terry Bollea, because the guy had a hellacious run.
You know,
that was my thought process back in the day.
I think, Steve, quite honestly, whether it's a one-off or, and if I had been picking up the pencil and was going to, you know, pencil in the match and book an angle, it'd be a one-off, one time. I don't need to go to the well and see if we can get two out of something that we're lucky to get the one out of.
Okay, well, now let's go to the finish room.
Yeah, that's easy.
it's easy for you and me.
Well, see, yeah, he gets a stunner. You're staying. He's leaving. You give him a hug or shake his hand like a man when it's over. And he's as whole as he could be if you chose to do that. Or you do it the next night on Raw when all of a sudden, you know, he maybe somewhere down the road, it's you and him in a tag match. I'm just looking at, I don't see why it would be hard to do business. You wouldn't have that 30-minute knockdown, drag-out athletic match like you had the three times at WrestleMania with Rock because he was an athletic son of a gun.
Right.
You know, Terry.
That's kind of where my head was at, though, in having those kind of matches. I didn't think we could deliver at that level. And when you go to what him and Rock did at WrestleMania 18.
Right.
Oh, they did nothing.
No.
They had the people in the palm of their hands. It's one of the most electric crowds that I'd ever seen. And everything they did got the best response possible. It was an unbelievable matchup. So they did it without really doing anything, and everything they did meant so much. Yeah. I take my hat off.
You could have done
two guys for the match that they put on that night.
Yeah, that was awesome, and it stole the show because everybody thought it was going to be good, but nobody thought it was going to be a lifetime memory. If you were in the building,
never forget it.
You'll, and yeah, in Toronto, and like you know, Lawler and I were lucky as hell because we were at ringside getting to call the match. That's a lifetime memory, and so it was really cool stuff. Hey, look, I got. We're out of time, I'm told, here for this time. We will do this again very soon, but I really want to thank you for taking the time to be here on this show, and I've enjoyed the questions. I got so many more that I'm just curious about, so maybe we can do that at another time.
Hey, man, whatever is your schedule, I appreciate being the first guy on your show. I tell you what, I got a couple friends, that are my true friends and that have been real good for me and good to me. And man, I tell you what, when I was laying there getting my neck cut on and I woke up after a C3-4 fusion and see you sitting across the damn room, sitting in a chair, I think about that all the time. So I'm glad I could be your first guest. I think you're going to have a blast with the podcasting business. I think, the people that tune into this show are going to get a unique perspective of really something that only you, a guy with a lifetime in the business who worked with so many of the greatest wrestling minds in the history of pro wrestling / sports entertainment. I wish you all the best luck in the world with the show, and I'm back whenever you want me on.
All right, buddy. I appreciate you, and appreciate everybody tuning in. See you later, everybody.